Welcome to the Paranormal Gateway Prep Talk. My special guest is Kevin Dave Green. Kevin was born in Richmond, Kentucky. He has a BA in English from Berea College and an MA from Eastern Kentucky University. He's an instructor in Interpretive English and Theater at EKU. He also writes several books, including Horror in the Heartland, New England Nightmares, and Kentucky Book of the Dead. He covers such topics as history, biography, historical true crime, natural disasters, folklore, ghost lore. Tonight, Kevin will share some of those stories. He spends his free time perfecting his vocal impersonation of the cartoon character Droopy. Without further ado, let's welcome Kevin to the show.
Hello,
Kevin. Good. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, I'm doing fine. Greetings from Richmond, Kentucky.
Yay. So, I always start off by asking, have you ever had any paranormal encounters yourself?
Well, I think so, but I'm not absolutely positive. I used to work as a tour guide at a mansion called Whitehall, very close to Richmond, only a few miles away. And it was constructed in the 1860s by an early emancipationist named Cassius Clay. And his enormous mansion, about 44 rooms, if you include closets, and most mansions at the time did not have closets. So that's pretty unusual. Originally, the house was built in the 1790s by Clay's father, but in the 1860s, he built around and on top of it, making it much larger. And it's open for tours, and I was a guide there for about 6 years every summer. And it's a very interesting place, very spooky. A lot of people, tour guides, tourists, people who come to the house, claim that they see things there, which is to me very interesting, especially if more than one person sees it at the same time. And unfortunately, I never really saw anything interesting, although some of my fellow guides did. I did hear some things that struck me as very unusual. And in a book called Kentucky Book of the Dead, I tell some of the stories. The one that I typically tell if people want a good personal ghost story is one day, one summer, we had a very large group of people coming in on a bus. And whenever we have large groups, they would put a guide on each floor. One interesting feature of Whitehall is that it has split-level rooms, which you don't often see in houses that old because of the old house being the original house and the newer section being built on top and around it. There are split levels. And on this particular day, I was supposed to show the third floor to the large group. And there was a guy named Amy who had a very small group, maybe two, maybe three people. And she was in the house somewhere because her group got there before the large group. And I was in the room between the second and third floor, just waiting for the large group to arrive. And I wasn't thinking about ghosts. I find that if you're thinking about ghosts and you really want to see one, typically you probably will, but I wasn't thinking about them. I remember I was trying to remember song lyrics. And there's a room on the third floor that we call the history room. It used to be somebody's bedroom. We're not sure whose, but there are photographs and just various bits and pieces of things found on the grounds. And generally, that's the last room we show people on the third floor. And then everyone goes down outside, down the stairs and outside. And on this day, I heard a woman speaking very clearly coming from the history room. She was I couldn't make out what she was saying, but it was a feminine voice. She was speaking in a very low tone. And I figured it was Amy, the guide, saying something like, OK, everybody, take a look around and then we'll all go outside. And several minutes passed, total silence. Nobody came out of the room. And I could hear my large group getting closer and closer. And I thought I better go to the history room and tell Amy to get her group out because once the large group comes upstairs, she's going to be trapped because there was only one way downstairs. So I went to the history room and it was completely, totally empty. And there was no way anybody could get past me because I was standing in the only exit, the only way out of the room, the only way downstairs. And later I asked Amy about it, and she said that she had taken her group through the house long before I went upstairs to the third floor. And we did a few tests with some of the female guides. I asked them to please stand in the history room and speak in varying tones of voice, various loudnesses, and I will stand where I was standing. And every time it was very obvious that their voice was coming right from the history room. That was something that made me stop and say, well, I don't know, maybe there really is something to the house's reputation after all.
Wow. So, well, at least you had that experience, if you have any more after that.
Oh, it was, I heard other things. There was one day, there's a room, there's a spiral staircase in the house, and there's a room under the staircase, which we think was probably a coat room whenever the Clays had parties. And we call it the powder room. It's where the guides would hang out between tours. And I was in there one day with a maintenance man, and we heard coming up through the vent this terrible sound. It sounded like somebody beating metal with a piece of metal. And we weren't thinking about ghosts. We thought somebody had sneaked into the house and they're downstairs. So we ran downstairs to the room under the powder room, and it was completely empty. And that was interesting because there was not just me who heard it, but someone else. Two people heard it at the same time.
Yeah. That's clarification then right now.
Well, I really wish it would happen again and that I could witness it again, because it's just one of those things that you don't really think about the significance of it until after it's over, and then you wish you'd been paying more attention to it.
Yes, the first time I had my experience, I've been doing this for like by 15 or 16 years now, investing in paranormal through a couple different teams. My last team I was with for, I think, 12 years. But my first experience, and after that, I said, well, I'm going to keep going with it. Because that actually, I thought, gave the kick in the butt, for learning more stuff about it. So I got all library books and stuff. And but after that, I had a lot of experiences then. So if the more you're open to it, and more like a lot of places we go to 3 or 4 times, I think if the spirits and stuff get to know you, and they're more open to communicating with you. And I think I became more empathic as the years went by too.
And that's a good theory. I've sometimes thought that too, that maybe some people are just through genetics or something, that they're more open to these things. And maybe that's why other people, other guides, they saw things and heard things, but I only seemed to hear things, but I never saw anything really interesting.
Hmm. Well, it's really weird. When I first started off, I never felt anything. And I think what a pivotal moment was that I had is that we were doing an investigation at this it was like a tavern or area. It's called the Ship Inn. And it was in Pennsylvania. In Exton, Pennsylvania. And we were in the basement. And I got so emotional. I started crying. I didn't know what was going on. And I felt like I was burned up. And I had like a fever. And my friend had dragged me out and sent me outside in the picnic bench. And I'm like, oh, what's going on? Well, at that time, we had a medium with us, and we were kind of iffy with her, but she was really good. And she found out later that there was actually a fire in that, and we went back to the view, and when it was up before, but we looked up the basement, and the timbers were charred, so it was still part of the floor. in there. And like after that, it snapped with me. And now if I go in there for a second, I get a better feeling. And I think that I get out of my EP a lot because, you know, I'm more open to it now.
Well, that's really, really interesting. Where is this place?
It was in Pennsylvania.
Oh, Pennsylvania. Okay.
Yeah, I was born and raised in Pennsylvania. I moved out of Ohio 8 years ago. So I come out to be a better doctor, so I came out of Ohio.
Okay, I don't think I've heard of that place. But that's really interesting.
Yeah, it was just the one group that we were there with were actually on TV with them, but we weren't there then. So they were on Discovery, Microsoft, something with it. But it's a pretty popular place that you went to. I don't even know if it's there anymore. That was like 15 years ago, so I'm not sure. But yeah, it's something else than you in now. And I'm hoping to get to a fire museum in January.
Yeah, it would be back good. There.
Yeah. I've been there a few times already. I'm going to be a fourth time going, but I get a lot of stuff out of there.
I'd love to see something like that.
Yeah. I still, that place has a lot of shadow play there.
I always
do shadows, yeah.
Did you notice any unusual, inexplicable odors in places like that? Because at Whitehall, we definitely, that's something else that I did personally experience. We would smell like candles. And of course, it's a historic house. You're not allowed to have burning candles in there, but every now and then we would smell candles. And we would smell perfume, which didn't really smell like anything modern. It had an extremely old-fashioned kind of scent to it. Mm-hmm. And the really strange thing about them is these smells wouldn't really fade in and fade out the way they usually do. They would just come on in a moment, and then they'd be gone instantly, just like somebody was turning a switch off and on.
I think had a cigar smell.
We did smell cigars once in a while, and of course, there's no smoking allowed in the historic house.
Or this place either, because the fire museum. So, but and also, I think we also had a odor of burning wood.
Burning wood.
So we got that once, I think, also. Oh, they have the museum has tons of different old fire engines, and the one that had the water thing on the back to pump out, and the old sirens.
Yeah, one of those.
Yeah, but we actually picked that sound up on the EVP.
Huh.
We actually heard it going off and ran back, and there was nobody back there.
I love that place.
It's like awesome place to go. If you're I'll take you.
Okay, I'd really like to see it. I sure would.
I know I'm probably getting in, so I know the guy pretty well. Who's in charge of it? So
if you ever get a chance to come down around Richmond, Kentucky, I will try to get a chance to take you to see Whitehall.
Oh, I'd love to do that.
It's really something. Down. I mean, ghosts or no ghosts, it's definitely worth going to see.
So, Kentucky, I wonder how far it is for me. I'm sorry, I didn't really map it out, but I hope not come down. That's when the weekend.
Yeah, that's probably a few hundred miles from where you are. So, you probably want to be coming down for more than one reason, more than one thing to see.
Yeah. Definitely come down if I come down way, do an investigation.
Oh, there you go.
If I come that way. So, there's a lot of places I want to go, where you do, but I see here or there. So, How did your academic journey obtaining degrees in English influence your path towards writing about history, true crime, folklore?
How did I get interested in these things? Or
Yeah.
Well, it's really, really difficult to explain it. People are always, I do a lot of historical true crime books too, and people will always ask, why are you interested in supernatural topics? Why are you interested in historical murders? And I really have no idea. It's just two subjects I've been interested in my entire life, as far back as I can remember. I can't think of any real reasons or catalysts for it. Usually, if you're interested in something as an adult, you can think back to your childhood and you know what triggered that interest, but I really don't know. It must say something about me, but I'm not sure what.
With being born and raised in Kentucky, how did that influence your writing?
I'm not really sure about that either. I did grow up in a rural sort of county. Richmond is more of a bluegrass county with a large city, Madison County, I should say, a large city, Richmond, and a few smaller towns like Berea. But I spent my teenage years in a more rural place, Jackson County. And I never really thought that it influenced my writing too much, but sometimes I'll go back and reread my old books and I'll find phrases that I obviously must have heard growing up out in the rural areas of Kentucky. So I guess it did influence it some.
With your horror in the heartland, certain gothic tale, do you want to share some of the strange burial customs?
One thing I guess I should explain first, people are always asking, where do all these stories come from? Because a typical book of mine will have dozens and dozens, maybe even hundreds of stories. And I'm pleased to say a lot of the times are stories nobody else has told and you can't find them anywhere else. Excuse me. The way that I find them, for many years, I've gone through old newspapers just looking for strange stories, the same way Charles Fort used to do. And I've gone through every issue of the Louisville Courier Journal on microfilm from 1830 to 1939, just keeping track of interesting sounding events, murders, paranormal, supernatural, and just pretty much anything that I find interesting. And then if I need to write a book, I've got all the research done. I've got all the dates and the page numbers. All I have to do is go back and copy the pages and try to write them up in an interesting fashion. But since you mentioned burial customs, that's something I've always found kind of interesting. So whenever somebody would get a strange type of burial, I would make a note of it. And then when it came to write a book on the Midwest, I already had all my stories ready to go. Or rather, I knew where to go to find the stories. Now, there are stories in there. I have an awful memory. And because the books usually have so many stories, it's hard for me to remember things off the top of my head. But I remember there being one about a woman buried with corn stalks on her casket, because in her last few years, she was an invalid and she was unable to move. And she looked out her window and all she could see was corn stalks in the field outside. So I don't know, I guess that preyed on her mind somehow. And she wanted corn stalks on her coffin.
Yeah, I noticed there's a lot of grave robbing too going on back then.
Yeah, I don't know why that's been a lifelong interest, but almost all of my books have in some form or fashion a story about grave robbers and body snatchers. It was a big industry once, especially in places like Indiana and Ohio, because they had a lot of medical schools, and medical schools were given, say, the bodies of convicts or the bodies of people who died in poorhouses, but there really weren't enough to go around. So grave robbers would go to graves not long after people were buried and very, very carefully and cautiously steal their bodies and sell them to medical schools. And I've even found a few cases where they would murder people to sell their bodies.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
It's a lot easier than digging one up.
Yeah, you say your book, yeah.
And
But
unfortunately, a lot of
yeah.
medical schools wouldn't ask questions. They were just happy to get a
Huh?
fresh body.
All right. And I read the one where they went to dig up the grave of some old lady who sold their jewelry, and they dug up the wrong grave.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a really horrible story. Part of the fun is telling a really dreadful, horrible event, but trying to make it a little funny if you can, just to sort of lighten it up a little. If I
So,
remember correctly, what was going on there, and I think it was in Ohio, actually. I'm pretty sure it was. A woman
right, but
died recently, and a couple of grave robbers from out of town came and, they went to the cemetery at night because, of course, you don't want to do this in the middle of the day. And they unearthed her grave in the dark of night. They didn't bring a lantern, obviously. And when they opened the coffin, the smell was really, really bad. And they were thinking, well, she shouldn't have gone bad that fast.
yeah.
And one of them reached in to do a freshness test, just grabbed hold of the ear, and the ear came off. So they reburied the body, and then a few months later, although it was kept secret, the word got out anyway. And then it was discovered they had actually unearthed her grandfather, who was buried beside her, who had died the year previously. So they should have brought a lantern.
Also heard out that the families will hire people to guard their graves to keep that nonsense from happening.
Yeah, it was sort of an industry. People had what they
Yeah.
called grave watchers. If your relative died and you didn't, we wanted to make sure that their body wasn't snatched, you would hire people to sit near the grave with shotguns, just waiting for a medical student to come by. And I've even found a few cases where they would shoot the medical students or the professional grave robbers. Sometimes students did it, but usually they hired somebody else to do the dirty work.
I think I read more books. Was there a hotel or something that they kept the dead or something or killed them? Was that in?
Let me think about that. That rings a bell. I just can't remember everything.
Because they had a shipment in the basement, and I guess they sold one at the school.
Was that in one of my books?
I think it was. I'm not sure. I read all the books
I
that
don't.
I.
Oh,
Yeah.
I remember. I remember. At least I think I do. That's probably the Bender family in Kansas.
Yes.
Yeah, that
Yeah.
was it. They had a cabin. They called it a hotel, but it
But
was really just a cabin.
yeah.
And they really weren't body snatchers. They were just plain old murderers for profit. If somebody stayed overnight and they thought it was a prosperous looking person, they'd distract him and hit him in the head with a hammer and bury him in
Yeah.
the garden and take whatever money he happened to have with him.
It kind of reminds me of that old movie called Motel Hell.
I've seen it, I remember it.
Yeah.
I didn't think
Yeah.
anybody else had ever seen that, so that's pretty
Yeah.
nice.
Yeah. I kind of reminded me of that when you said that about. I've heard certain stories about restaurants. Probably bodies didn't make it anywhere, but that was something that happened back in. That's not your book, I think, but it's something I heard before also.
I don't think I've written about that one.
No, I'm thinking of yours. It's another book I read
Oh,
about
okay.
somebody did that. They had people and they killed them and they ground up everything and they made
Wow.
burgers.
That's like Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's I've got some nasty stuff back in there that they got away with.
Yeah,
I
I
mean, it's terrible.
some cases of that happening in Germany right after World War I. When inflation was really bad and there wasn't much food and people were pretty desperate for food, I remember hearing some cases of people committing murders and then converting their victims into meat and selling the meat. So
Yeah, I
it's
heard about
definitely
that.
happened.
Yeah.
Without
You
it.
should think Usually they go through the dogs first and then there.
Yeah, so I like to say about anything you can imagine has happened at some point.
Yeah. Wow, like I said, just one of them back then was just, I don't know. I mean, also the one guy who came over to the U.S. and, what was his name, Hammond or how's, what's his name?
Oh, was this a German after Holmes. World War I?
Holmes.
Oh, H.H. Holmes, I thought you meant yeah. Fritz Haarman. Fritz Haarman, yeah. One of the Germans who actually killed and created meat out of victims. But yeah, H.H. Holmes, he was the hotel keeper in Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's who he was.
Yeah, and he used to do a lot of his work during the Chicago Fair.
Yeah.
Remember that? Yeah, I thought his grossly fascinating to me that he got away with it for so long, too. I mean, but you know, nowadays, you know, they'll take along with DNA and everything, so a lot of times they'll take that along.
Yeah, it's very true. It's harder to get away with these things.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank God for that, huh?
Yeah, very good.
Yeah. So, knowing nightmares about some unexplained death, and we're talking about bizarre murders. Do you remember any of those that you want to share?
From New England Nightmares, oh, that's another one that has dozens of stories in it. From supernatural to true crime, so it's actually got a little of everything in it. One of my favorites in there was something I had never heard of anywhere before. It was called the Denmead Horror, and it took place in New Brunswick, New Jersey in 1887. It would be hard to describe it briefly, but there was a family called the Denmeads, a family of misers and eccentrics, hermits, who lived in a teeny, tiny little house in New Brunswick. It was four brothers, I think, and the wife of one of them. And one of them and the woman would sometimes come out of the house. But after a certain point, the woman went in and never came back out. And her sister came to town looking for her. And eventually they got a court order and the house door was broken down. And it was, you've seen American Hoarders. This is a great hoarder story from history. That little house was just packed, completely filled with everything you can imagine, including two dead people and a very sick dog, too. And a couple of the Denmeads had never stepped outside the house in something like 30 or 40 years. That was a pretty gruesome, pretty interesting story. The two bodies had basically melted into the bed they'd been in there so long.
Yeah. I can imagine it was like soupy and stuff.
The newspapers gave a very, very, very interesting description of the two bodies. It just kept getting worse and worse because it turned out the two living Denmeads were sharing a bed with the two dead ones.
Mm-hmm. I usually would say it's stew consistency. I'm like, ugh.
Yeah. Oh, it was a real sensation at the time, and then it was forgotten. And today, very few people have ever heard of it, but it was really something at the time.
Yeah, I know that. There was a one about the two guys fighting over a girl, and I think her ghost came back. Well, she didn't die then, but she came back, I guess, as a ghost at one of those places you're talking about. They were gambling to get her for her. And they said, well, if you win this card game or whatever, then you can have her. And then what happened is the other guy didn't like it and he saddened. And I think he went to jail for that. But I think this is in one of your books. And what stuck out to me is the girl's name was Mary Wise.
Oh, right.
And my mom's name is Mary Wise. So I thought that was really weird. So.
Yeah, I've done so many books, I'm not even sure which one that's in. I think it's in Kentucky Book of the Dead. I think that it happened in Rockcastle County, Kentucky. I wouldn't swear to it, but that seems to ring a bell. I'll have to look it up later and find out.
Yeah, it's the one that was kind of stuck out. But... Wow. I want to back up here a little bit, but do you remember anything about the peculiar wills and the strange ones?
Oh, I'm sorry, about the...
The wills?
Oh, wills. People who have the wills. Oh, boy, there's some funny ones. That was another thing I would... if I just happened to be going through the old papers and I found a good story about some eccentric will, I would make a note of the date and the page number. Then when it came time to write about them, I had all kinds of stories.
Yeah.
Just a lot of people seem to get back at people they're mad at, at mothers-in-law and relatives. One theme I just kept seeing, so many examples of it, people saying something along the lines of, I hereby will 5 cents to my son to go buy a rope to hang himself with.
I saw it.
That just kept happening over and over and over. I'm sure each of them thought they were being clever and original, but it just kept happening.
That's a funny one. Yeah, I know a lot of those wills in there are pretty funny. But you get to score it all your life and people treat you like crap. Yeah.
Yes, they do. And that's a good way to get back at them.
Yeah.
Well, there was one. Oh, gosh. Was it New England? I think it's a New England nightmare. It's one of the richest men, in fact, who ever lived in America. And in the book, he's called Wellington B. One thing the publishers wanted me to do, they wanted me to, in most cases, not give the last names of people involved. Because I guess they thought somebody somewhere, some descendant would be offended, but... I actually think that didn't help the book any. His real name was Wellington Burt. And I can't remember the year he died. I think it was in the early 20s, but he was so angry with his relatives trying to make money off him that his will was that none of his fortune would go to any of his relatives until his last grandchild had died. So you can imagine how many decades that took. If I remember correctly, the last grandchild died in 2011. So fairly recently, really. I can't remember how much money there was. It was quite a lot. I don't know what happened to it. I guess it was all allotted to the surviving descendants of the grandchildren.
All right. I've also heard stories before about the moving all their money to pets.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was kind of funny, too. But I'll be updating your books. So I heard that before, too. But yeah, they found many ways to get back at them. So that's always come down to you never seen your son or daughter for 10, 20 years, and they come back, you know, and you're on your deathbed. Yeah,
and it's not just wills either, but also gravestones. If you go through my books, there's lots of examples of people getting back at individuals they're angry with on tombstone epitaphs.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times people would actually give the name of a person who murdered a relative, and then they'd end up getting sued for libel. And in some cases, the epitaphs still remain, which I guess means they lost the lawsuits. And sometimes they were ordered by courts to remove the offending epitaphs.
Well, if they proved me guilty by all doubt, then why can't you keep out there? It's the same thing as posting in paper if you want to. That's free will. Right?
Right.
So.
And then, of course, a tombstone is permanent.
Right.
And sometimes it's just wives insulting husbands, husband insulting wives. Right. I guess if you're not personally involved, it can be pretty amusing.
Right. I remember also one guy who, if he sold his house or whatever, but he built a mausoleum to live in.
Yes, he did. let's see. Was that?
Maybe Book of Death, maybe.
I believe the story there was his wife died. Mm-hmm. And he basically moved into the mausoleum with her.
Yeah.
If I remember it correctly. I'm trying to remember where that was. I think that was in New York State. Yeah, it was. It was in New York State. He really wanted to camp out and stay in her mausoleum all the time. But, of course, the cemetery proprietor said, no, you can't do that. So instead, since he was retired, he simply went in there every morning when the gates opened and left at night when the gates closed. And he spent so much time in there in the crypt that he actually died in there himself.
Yeah. I think also one of some people teasing him said, not going to put him in there.
Yeah, I think so.
We're not going to put you in there.
There may be two stories like that. You'd be surprised how often these things happen.
Yeah, I think in the end, what happened is the mausoleum over the years just decayed and stuff, and they had to be buried somewhere else. Yeah. I think they take a part of the mausoleum and use it as a gravestone or something?
I believe so.
Yeah.
Yeah, that sounds right. There's another book called Weird Wild West with an Oklahoma story in it of a merchant whose wife committed suicide, and he had her placed in a glass-lidded coffin in a mausoleum, but anybody could enter. He didn't really lock the door to it, so people would go in just to take a look at her. Apparently that's the thing to do. And it was like that for many decades till they finally bricked it up. And you can't see it now, but for a long time you could.
All right. I remember something that, like you said, glass top coffin and But I don't know, when you bury them with the glass up, how long, I mean, with the pressure of the ground and everything, don't you think it collapsed right away? Oh, I mean, how thick was the glass?
That's a good question. I don't imagine it was really, really thick. I'd like to know. If it's going to have so many feet of dirt on it, you'd think it would have to be pretty thick to withstand the pressure of all the dirt.
You're talking probably 5 feet of dirt on top of that.
But then I've heard some really horrifying tales of prematurely buried people buried alive by accident. And sometimes they had the little face glasses and they'd smash it. So I guess, you know, it was thin enough that you could break it with your hand. Maybe it varied. I don't know.
Yeah.
I'd like to know.
But also, I remember back when there were a lot of cases of, dormancy, maybe, where your body seems like it's dead and there's no sign of life. And back then, when they didn't have bone. So you had to be buried within a couple of days or you had to be put in, like over the winter months, you had to be put in the basement.
Maybe it depended on the expensiveness of the coffin, the thickness of the glass.
Right.
But that reminds me of another story from New England Nightmares of a man in Vermont who was so afraid of being buried alive that not only did he have his relatives keep him above the ground for about a week after he died, but they built this very ingenious crypt so that he could alert people on the surface if he were buried alive. But also he had a, it's really hard to describe it, but there was a square in the monument in the ground with a glass at it so that you could look through the glass and see his face. It's actually still there, but I've been told that the glass is thick enough and because of moisture gathering under it that you can't really see anything. But I'm sure for a while it was quite possible to look through the glass and see the guy's skull down there.
Yeah, I also remember these have a tie string, the person's finger, and that leads through like a tube that would have a bell on it.
Oh yeah, that I found a lot of cases of that.
Yeah,
people being buried with this, it's sort of a tube going from the coffin to the surface, and they would be buried with a string on a finger and a bell on the other end. And the idea was that if they started moving in the coffin, it would ring the bell. In some cases, they had a flag it would raise.
Yeah. I think it might have been called, what it's called, a death bell.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if that's the right term or not for it.
A lot of people, they would, you see this in a lot of wills too. People saying, don't bury me for 2 weeks. Make sure you slash my veins.
Right, yeah. Yeah, in your book about slashing the veins, make sure.
Oh, yeah, you see a lot of that in my books, too. There's one really weird story, and I believe it's in New England Nightmares, of a man who wanted a knife driven in his heart after death. So his sisters paid a doctor to stick the knife in, and then for some reason nobody removed it. So he went to his funeral with this knife sticking out. Like the sword in the stone or something. I'm not sure what that was all about, but it makes a good story.
Who has the power to pull out the... Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, God.
Yeah, and I don't know.
Maybe a sorcerer and a stone dead.
I wonder what ever happened, though, to all those... They called them grave annunciators, the big tubes that would lead from the coffin to the surface. And apparently if you were buried alive, you could breathe through the tube and you could make flags go up. But you never see those. I keep thinking someday I'm going to go into an old cemetery and I'm going to see some big long metal tubes sticking out of a grave. And people are going to say, what's that? And I'll be able to tell them why. That's a grave annunciator.
Yeah, I remember...
I'm not sure.
There was a couple of older cemeteries I thought we would get to. Like, that one cemetery I used to go to with my ghost group, was called Pioneer Cemetery. And that is up in the Tuscarora Mountains in PA. It was like 4 or 5 miles up the road, and this graveyard was a little very big, 300 by 800 feet, but not very big, but had like probably 30 of graves in. And that place was pitch black, but there's tombstones there from the early 1800s.
Yeah.
So, and they're really getting to a point where you can barely see their names, but for the old tombstones, there is at least the easier way to see them, if you take a flashlight and you shine down, like straight down over it, you can make out the name and date that.
Yeah, those, I don't know if you're supposed to do it. I know at one time it was sort of a fad that if you took a piece of chalk and you rubbed the chalk on it, the names and dates would stand out. I'm not sure if they... If people frown on that now or if they're still doing it.
I doubt before. It's called grave rubbings.
Grave rubbings, yeah. They put wax paper on it, I think, or a crayon or something and rub the crayon, and then it's more readable.
Yeah, I damaged it. It's always the paper and friends get through it. He didn't really touch his time, really, but a lot of places I go to sue with some people I've no respect. And you see top water headstones and beer cans and...
Yeah, that always bothers me.
That's how we have to find ourselves. So we all still have garbage about being up with us. And I got the trash, you have the trash here. But yeah, people pay sometimes. And it's a shame because even that one there, I had one knock there, I think, once. But also some, I think, fell due to the weather. Because back then, they put the tombstones in, but they drive it to 6 inches in the ground. You know, I think it got smarter later and took me down further than that when they buried them.
Yeah, that's true. Sometimes they break in half. Sometimes they get cracked. Sometimes they topple right over. And it looks like a vandal did it, but really it was just decades of freezing weather and hot sun.
Right. Back then, I don't think they used marble with back then. I'm not sure what kind of mixture they made, but I don't see it marble.
Yeah, I think a lot of wealthy people maybe had marble stones, but most people, it looks like slate to me.
Not
positive, but it kind of looks like slate, which isn't going to last all that long in bad weather.
Right.
It's a sad thing. You hate to see a grave that's been forgotten.
Right. And I know some people who take care of some grave. They have there's no kind of I don't suggest this to anybody unless you're a professional and know how to do it. But some people actually have a job or do a cemetery. It has a special solution I'll use that doesn't damage anything. It just will clean up a little bit to get some of the like the mossy stuff on it.
Get the moss off of them.
Yeah, and other times they'll go through and have people come around and slip back up again or after. And I would mind having that job, though.
Yeah.
Because I going out and do that kind of stuff. But cause I like going to graveyards and cemeteries. You know, I'll take my quarter long sometimes, too. But, I mean, a lot of people think, well, they're not going to come back to the graves and stuff. But I've had stuff already. Yeah, but I always think, well, loved ones good to visit a cemetery. Who knows that they're not there to visit them back, you know. Hey, I'm here, too, you know, so.
Have you ever...
I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I was wondering, have you ever heard any interesting EVPs or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you had different...
In cemeteries?
Actually, Pioneer, I think. I went along on that one. But they had a female voice talking, and I think a male also, but I never had one. I've been out a couple of times. I can't get out anymore. But it's been a while since I've been to one. But they're picked up. They fit already. Yeah, I always told people, take it low. Yeah, you never know. So I try to record over I go to.
No. Have you heard of any like specifically haunted cemeteries? Because you do hear about them sometimes. It's hard to imagine anything scarier.
There's a lot out here in Ohio. I actually have a haunted cemetery book in Ohio that I bought from a person I met at the Krampus Festival a couple of years ago. And I bought his book. And it has a tour of, he broke it down into north, south, east, west, the whole way around, cemeteries. And what I did, I read the book and everything, I said, well, I'm going to do something was, if I want to go to the cemetery, I want to plot the GPS coordinate for it. And I said, just pop it in and go. So, Well, I did. I made an app for it that you can put on your phone. So I broke it down into categories of locations. And when you click on a location, it'll pop up other locations. And all you do is you click on the GPS, and it'll go to your GPS to give you directions to go there. It works pretty good.
I'd like to see a book about that, a book that's just specifically about haunted cemeteries and EVPs taken there and photographs taken there, videos.
This book, I can't reach this book right now, but
Is
his
it
name
is it well, well, I'm
is
sorry.
his name is Bucky Cutright.
Okay, is it all Ohio
It's
stories?
all yeah, it's all Ohio cemeteries. It's that book is, yeah.
Well, I'll have to look for that. That sounds good.
Yeah, I'll like to say his name is Bucky Cutright. So it's a good book. We got to be very good friends. I don't mind sharing with you. But yeah, I get in that app to use, and he's gonna when he sells his book, he's gonna include the app with it. So I get to use it yet, but maybe this spring or summer I'll go out.
Yeah, that would be the best time to do it, I think.
All
The
right.
most comfortable time to do it, anyway.
Yeah, we had like I said, for cemeteries. We'll get back to that again. I like to spend more time. We actually were, do you ever hear of Centralia
Oh, okay.
in Pennsylvania? The town that's still burning underneath, the coal burning under. We actually went there to do an investigation at their cemetery. And we were just getting ready to set up about a few hours. Once the cemetery was over a few rows down, we were here cemeteries and stuff set up. And just after one, about an hour or two, it started raining. So I was like, oh man, I'll have to go back sometime. But going through his pictures and stuff, my friend called me up and he took a lot of pictures and stuff. And he goes, you know, really, guess what I caught a picture of? I'm thinking, well, what do you think? A cemetery, I don't know, it's like a ghost, a spirit, an angel, maybe, I don't know. And he's answering me, and up in the sky, it looks like a UFO up in the sky. And I was like, whoa. So we got that. It looks pretty.
So that really got filmed.
Yeah, it's actually a picture. I took
Oh,
his
okay.
picture, and we was going through the picture. We saw it, and like, you know, when he did 90 over, he did different color, filters on it, and I'll have to send you to show, take a look at it. It's
Okay.
pretty weird.
Yeah, that's something I'd like to do. I don't do it, but I'd like to. It's just actually go on investigations with equipment and cameras. I've never done that, but I'd like to.
Well, what's your any travel plans this spring or summer?
None yet.
Hey, welcome out of
Early.
time.
Oh, that sounds like I ought to.
Yeah. I take you to the fire museum. I get a lot of stuff out of
That would be great. I'd love to
there.
see that.
Yeah, it's awesome place. Yeah, all kinds of old artifacts, old houses, old fire engines, and it just breathes all that old energy,
Well, that would be worth
and
going to see just in itself.
it's just a tour. He gives a tour. I don't need a tour anymore. If I have to guess, I'll tell him to take a tour while I set stuff up, because yeah, it's that's a great place to go. I saw a lot of evidence we got out of there, but it's amazing. The only girl we actually I was setting up my computer. I run software off my computer and stuff I've got a video camera that goes on my computer and records. And I'll set it up and she either scream. I'm like, "What are you screaming about?" And she goes, "That one you over there, I didn't move from 15 feet to here. I'm sitting here when I'm shooting it up." And she struck out. Here she saw in the corner, she walked around, a man sitting there in the corner.
And th
And
this was at the museum.
fire museum, yeah.
Fire Museum.
Yeah.
Did she was she able to make anything out? What he looked like?
The,
Anything
they
like
said it dug the a man standing there. She I just said she saw a hat or not, but she says she saw a full guy standing there. Because she wondered who it was, and she looked over to see me. She screamed. And
Oh, yeah.
she ran towards me, and I'm like, but like I said, we see shadows there a lot. Dark. Like last time I was there, I saw just a fire engine here. I'm not very gonna sit on the chair. We're doing an EVP session and talking. And up at the end of the hallway or the next row, aisleway or whatever, I saw, I don't want to hit a microphone. I saw it up this side, dark against and this way, back. So it was one big, one small eye.
Wow.
Now, that's my anxious back here again. Like I said, oh, he's my fourth time, probably worth it. It's nice, he don't charge for it like a lot of people do, but he takes donations. You know, so I'll put $50 in where I go.
Oh, sure.
It's just to pay. It gives enough
Yeah.
for it. If it gives a good cause.
Any place that subsists on donations, I always want to be generous with them.
Yeah,
It's probably the only income they have, really.
yeah, I think it, I forget what used to be a department store. That department store, I think maybe called, I don't quote me, I think it might have called Hayward's. Maybe. I may have seen it or not. Don't quote me on that, but there was a department store back in the early 30s, I think 40s. And then again, I'm sure maybe the early 2000s, I think the museum took over. They have a bingo every Saturday night too to raise money for it.
Oh, that would be nice.
Yeah,
I'd like to see that.
we usually have to wait for a little bit. But we start investigation at 9 o'clock. We have $3 bingo people hung out. But it's well worth the wait though. I hope to get in with in January. I'm gonna have do you know who Cherise Williams is?
No, I don't think so. Who is that?
She has a book, Witch's Guide to Goose Hunting. She pretty much helped her out of her show last week.
Oh,
And
I think I have actually heard of her.
yeah, Witch's Guide. I heard her on a couple weeks ago. And she probably would come along with the Jerry Rice, the museum. Too. But I never had a witch before on the investigation. So it's going to be very interesting. So I think I'm going to buy a hard copy of her book and have it signed on there when she comes.
I'll have to look into that one too.
Yeah. I guess after other show, I'll put it in there for you.
Okay.
Yeah, wow. It's 8 o'clock already. Can't believe an hour already.
It is. Yeah, sure enough. Well, I've really enjoyed speaking with you. Thank you for having me on
Oh,
your show.
yeah, it's a pleasure having you on. Thank God it worked out for us this time.
Oh, I
And
know. Huh. That's what I
but
get for having such an old computer.
Mine now is getting up there, but it still does pretty good for these shows. I never have you had a leg or anything, which is good. So, after the show, this within late tonight, early tomorrow, it'll be available on Spotify, Amazon Music, Pandora, iHeart,
Great.
and I'm missing one.
Well, I hope
Yeah.
lots of people get to see us on there.
Yep, I'm sure they will. I'm gonna go ahead and give you the link to the
Okay.
YouTube.
I will post it and I'll try
And
to get people to look also.
okay, sounds good. Well, thanks, Kevin, for a long night.
Okay, thank you very much. I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, anytime you come back on, let me know.
Okay, thank you.
You're more than welcome back on again. Had a lot of fun tonight.
All right, I did too. I appreciate it again. Thank you.
Sure thing. Well, till next time, have a haunting, everybody.
All right, have a good weekend.
You too. Thank you.
All right, goodbye.
Bye.